Oh man, for me, kiting is like one of the coolest sports out there. I mean, it's so diverse and it's got all of the ingredients to become a super big sport.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Basics Podcast. Today we got a real special guest, goes by the name of Liam Whaley. He's been a pro kiteboarder since he was around 13, 14 years old. He's been very successful in the freestyle side of kiteboarding, and he recently came third in the Red Bull King of the Air. So he's definitely one of the top tier competitors within kiteboarding right now. And yeah, we're just going to dive into his story a little bit, kind of find out how he got into kiting, how he got into the competition side of kiteboarding, and just, you know, learn a little bit more about Liam Whaley, who is doing a great job at putting his passions to work. All right, guys, let's jump into the pod. Wah!
1, 3, 5, go!
Coming from the wild, wild west indeed.
So what's up, boo? Thanks for taking the time to sit down and have a little chit-chat.
Yeah, dude, no worries. I've been keen to get back onto this podcast. I've seen a few guys on it, and I'm like, when's he going to give me the call? Being left out over here.
That's funny, man. Had no idea. Well, you know, today's the day, bruh.
Amped.
Cool, man. So yeah, usually I kind of like to start the podcast off by just going into a little bit of your backstory, you know, because a lot of people may know of you, but a lot of people may not know who Liam Whaley is at all. So if you could kind of just jump into, you know, how you got into kiting and just your whole kind of story before getting to where you're at now.
Yeah, definitely. So basically I was born in Ibiza, which everyone knows is an island for partying, and it's not too much of a sporty scene over there. Mm. But yeah, my parents were super into windsurfing back in the day. My dad always used to go off to Maui. As soon as windsurfing came out, he was one of the first guys out there. So he would go back and forth from Europe and kind of, yeah, spend half of the season working over in Ibiza in a little bar that he opened. And then the other half windsurfing in Maui. And eventually he wanted to find a place in Europe that was really good for windsurfing. And yeah, he came across Tarifa and he loved the place. And basically he looked for a piece of land or something, some place to invest in over here. And in 1983, he opened up a hotel here in Tarifa. And eventually it kind of became the capital of water sports. Well, start windsurfing. And then of course, when kiting came out, kiting. But yeah, we were back and forth from Ibiza to Tarifa every summer. So from a very young age, I'd see all the kites on the beach and everybody riding. And of course, my dad was super into it. And I think I took my first lesson when I was 8 with one of my dad's friends in Tarifa during summer. And yeah, I just absolutely love the sport. I actually had a bit of a scare the first session. I was like learning in a lagoon, and the water was coming out of the lagoon like full speed. So the tides were high and there was a lot of water pushing out. Wow. And I got dragged out to sea, had to release my kite. And I was like this little 8-year-old fucking bobbing around between a massive swell, and the teacher had to come save me through these currents. Damn. But yeah, my sister was on the beach crying and stuff, but I wasn't scared at all. I just loved kiting so much. I wanted to carry on with the lesson. So yeah, that's how I kind of got into it. And I was still living in Ibiza at the time. And I was every day since I started kiting, I wanted to move to Tarifa. That was my goal in life. Like just trying to convince my parents, I want to live there. I want to live there. And my dad in the back of his mind, he kind of wanted to move to Tarifa as well. So yeah, he didn't want to say it because he knew my mom really loved Ibiza because she had a good social life and yeah, a lot of her friends were there. But my dad wanted to move somewhere a bit more sporty. Plus, he had his hotel there. So eventually, when I was 14, we moved. And yeah, that's when it all kind of kicked off for me. I had the opportunity to train with all of the best guys. You know, Alex Pastor was here, Gisela Pulido, and they were all in their competing peak. So everyone was training full on every day. And I'll just kind of ride behind them and take some knowledge in. Wow, so yeah, that's how it all started.
Super crazy, dude. That's super sick. So your dad obviously played a huge part, just kind of introducing you to sport, it sounds like.
And then, oh, definitely.
That's pretty cool too. So I didn't even know like Alex Pasta and all those guys were like in the Tarifa area.
Yeah, man. Alex has been living here. Well, he was born in Malaga, which is just a couple hours up the road, but he has a similar story. Like he moved here to Tarifa when he was 15, just with his brother, and started living here by himself just because he wanted a cat that bad. So a lot of ambitious people out here.
Okay, guys, so before we jump into the rest of this episode, I just want to give a big shout out to the guys who basically allow me to do podcasts, allow me to make YouTube videos, allow me to do all this stuff. My main sponsor, Tona Kiteboarding. If you never heard of them, they make awesome, fun, durable, and in my opinion, some of the most stylish kiteboarding gear out there. If you never heard of them, if you enjoy what I'm doing, stop right now. Well, no, let the podcast continue to play, but head over to www.tonalife.com and check out what we've been cooking up. All right, guys, let's get back into the episode. Wah. Yeah, super crazy, man. So, like, how is the actual kite scene in Tarifa? Because, you know, I've only seen a few photos and stuff, never been, but it looks like a very busy place. Is everywhere busy, or is it, you know, what is the actual scene like for someone like yourself who, you know, knows everywhere?
So it's a very touristy place. So that means it's seasonal. In summer, it's absolutely hectic. And even other holidays, it can get quite crazy on the water, especially. And now also like a party scene, like Tarifa's now it's famous for kiting and for partying in Spain. So it's just like a massive mix of people coming. But that's mostly in summer. Then the rest of the season, it's pretty chilled, actually. And we have most of the kite spots to ourselves. Like my favorite time of year is definitely spring, because it's kind of before the crowd comes in. The wind is actually much better. We still have some swell, so you can alternate between lagoons or riding in the sea. And it's just our crew here, you know, so you can put your head down and kind of focus on kiting. But yeah, in summer, for me, it's not the best place to train. That's why I was end of summer. I try to escape, go somewhere different.
So life in Tarifa is obviously pretty cool when you're local. You know, it's not just a busy Rama spot all the time, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's definitely. It's an all-around spot. You can do pretty much everything here. And it's fun because we have our seasons. We have our time for training, which is mostly like autumn, spring, winter, and then we have our time for, you know, vibing around and just having a good time, which is more in summer.
Cool, bro. And then, like, that's super interesting just to hear, you know, the kind of come up story. But like, when did it go from, you know, kid getting super into kiting to like, okay, boom, I have like a sponsor or I'm in competition? Like, when it go from like you just, you know, kind of doing it for fun, being around guys who are doing it full time, to you actually now kind of doing the same thing?
Yeah, so basically already from the age of like 13, 14, which was kind of the time where I moved to Tarifa, I'd already started competing in all of the national and junior events, because at the time there was actually a lot of competitions going around and there was a lot of juniors out there trying to push it. So I would do the Spanish nationals. I started to do well in those. I won it when I was like 14. Then I did the European junior nationals, which I won that as well when I was 15. And, you know, at that time, I already in my head, I knew I wanted to compete on the world tour and I knew I wanted to be a world champ. And I was fully committed and I was super confident that I could be. You know, I remember being having a little bit of a high ego when I was a kid, and I would just go around telling everyone that I'm going to be the fucking world champ. Everyone's like trying to put this kid back in his place and I'm just not having it. It's like, I'm going to do it. And yeah, dude. And when I was, I think 15, I did my first world tour stop, which was in Dakhla. And I remember there was like qualifiers back then. And like, I won the qualifiers and I beat a few of the guys that had been competing on tour for ages. So yeah, I upset a few of those guys, and that's when my parents kind of started taking it seriously. But apart from that, I think just before that, I got an international sponsorship with Cabrina. They saw a few of my videos online because I'd gone to Brazil a couple of times and made like a few freestyle edits. And yeah, I got a call from one of the managers of Cabrina offering me an international contract, which I think I got like just enough money to pretty much do the whole world tour, which was absolutely insane. And that's when I was like, all right, I'm leaving school. I'm leaving everything behind. And I'm just going to go for it. So that's when it all started for me.
Wow, dude, that's crazy. And like, it's crazy to hear like that kind of happen off video. Like, they saw some of your videos and that's kind of what prompted that whole thing. That's super crazy.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it was a combination between videos and a few like national European events.
Yeah.
And I guess they kind of saw this kid doing well and he had no sponsorships.
Yeah.
But that was another cool thing that my dad never pushed me or tried to manage me in any way. He was just like, he would just take me to a few comps, you know, see how I did, let me ride if I wanted to ride. And yeah, I guess it just worked because I loved it that much and I didn't feel pressured to do it. So
yeah, you just naturally kind of wanted to do your thing. That's cool, dude. Super sick. And then like you were with Cabrina for quite a long time, huh? Like,
yeah, so I've been with Cabrina from the very start until about a year ago now. So that was 6 years.
Yep.
And yeah, it was definitely a great experience. They helped me out a lot. They gave me the opportunity to travel and compete and go to photo shoots in Hawaii and do all of these crazy things as a kid. So I'm forever grateful for that. But yeah, last year was time to move on. I had a few different visions to them in mind, and yeah, F1 was just a bit more compatible with me.
Mm.
So yeah, now I'm riding for F1 and I'm absolutely stoked.
Yeah, that's cool, man. It's cool. So I guess the F1 guys just kind of saw the vision a bit more and it just, you know, made sense to kind of level up a little bit.
Yeah, sometimes when you're with a brand for so long, eventually they just kind of get used to having you and you feel like you get a bit stuck. Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes change is good just to feel like you can carry on progressing.
Yeah.
And, you know, as whenever you have a fresh start, people kind of take you more seriously and take you for what you are today, not for what you are in the past. So that's cool.
Yeah. Awesome. So obviously the whole F1 thing's going good because you obviously did pretty decent in the Red Bull King of the Air just, you know, a few weeks ago. So obviously gear's working good and man's stoked.
Yeah, definitely. It's pretty cool actually because I actually injured my fibula last summer.
Mm-hmm.
So I broke that bone during a GK event. It was like an air games event, which is just like a combination between freestyle and big air. But the conditions were super bad. It was literally 15 knots riding a 15 meter kite trying to do big air, and it just wasn't working out. And I'd never ridden straps before, but one of the categories was board off. So I knew I had to train a little bit on straps just to be able to pull off one board off.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was the semi-final heat against Carlos Mario. Went for a board off double front roll, very light conditions, probably went up like 4 or 5 meters high, not very high. Came down super soft, but my board was kind of swinging away from me. So I kind of tried to chuck it below my feet and land onto the board somehow as it was a comp.
Mm.
And yeah, I just landed with my ankle in the perfect position to snap the bone, and as soon as I landed I heard a big click. Damn. And I knew something was wrong. Yeah, I was just body dragging back to the beach thinking it didn't even hurt. I was just thinking, not another injury. I have to go through rehab again and do all of this and miss this and this competition, not be able to be on the water and miss my summer. It was just another crisis, but it was absolutely sick. It was probably one of the best recoveries that I've had in my life because I literally, from day one, I was determined to do it as fast as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Had a super good team around me, my trainer, my physio, they were just like pushing me every day. So came back from that injury and in 3 months, I was back on the water. Wow. And did 1 month of training in Brazil and then competed at the last WKC stop, freestyle stop in Brazil, and managed to come fourth, which was pretty sick achievement for me. Still having an ankle which was swelling up and things.
So that's pretty crazy, man. So the whole injury thing, that's probably one of the biggest scares as, you know, a pro athlete, especially for someone like you who's heavily reliant on competition, you know. I guess after having a few injuries, what is your training routine now? Sounds like you're probably pretty focused on, you know, injury prevention and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. I train as much as I can, especially when I'm at home. When I'm traveling, it's difficult to train because you don't have people you trust around you. But when I'm at home, I try to, you know, stay super healthy, eating, go to the gym as much as possible, and kind of prevent prevent getting injuries in the area which are most prone to them. So like obviously knees, shoulders. But every time I get a new injury, I learn a lot and I learn to take precautions in that certain area. Mm-hmm. And yeah, as many injuries as I've had in the past, every day I feel stronger actually. I don't feel like, I'm not scared of injuring the same place again because I'm like, okay, now I've got to focus on training that certain area. And then when I come out of the injury, it's actually feeling stronger than before. So, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess some good can come out of getting injured. You learn a lot about your body and you learn about, you know, just the physics of making sure you try your hardest to prevent that from happening again.
Definitely. I mean, if you're a person that has injured yourself a lot in the past, you're like, you're not scared of getting injured again. Whereas if you've personally never injured yourself in your life and you get your first injury, you're all freaked out about it. And you like, you take it almost too seriously.
Yeah.
I guess it's just experiences.
For sure, dude. So yeah, I'd like to kind of talk about the King of the Air a little bit more. Like, you know, how was that whole event for you this year? Because obviously you did all right. You got podium. I don't think you were 100% stoked at that third place, but if you could kind of talk a little bit about how the event went, like the event format and just a general vibe of, you know, what went down this year.
Yeah, so the difference between this year and last year is last year I literally came into the event as a wild card with zero expectations, just came in to try it out, have a little bit of fun and see how I did. And then last year, like out of nowhere, I came second, which was like, whoa. I can actually do this. I can do well in this event as well. Mm-hmm. As scared as I've been of this event in the past, just thinking about injuries and all of those kind of things. It's, you know, obviously it's the biggest event out there and you have to put yourself on the line because it's worth it. You know, it's mm-hmm. worth the exposure. It's not like any other event out there. So yeah, this year, the difference was I came in with very high expectations. I was like, all right, I came second last year. I can win it this year if I put a little more time into training and, you know, focus a bit more on the format and try to get myself dialed in. And yeah, I went for it full on. Unfortunately, the wind conditions didn't favor me too much during this event. Mm. I had to really push myself technically because I was riding a sea kite, obviously, because I'm super used to riding a sea kite and I love the direct feel and knowing exactly where the kite is in the air while performing my tricks. So a hybrid kite wasn't really an option for me, but I knew that I would have some disadvantages riding a sea kite. Like it's harder to get height. And that's something that, that's something that didn't really help me during this event, seeing as the format is 70% height. So, and you had to be way more technical than the other guys in order mm-hmm. to do well. And it worked for me a few heats. You know, I was doing a lot of unhooked things, kai loops with basically as many rotations and grabs as I can do. But yeah, as soon as I got to the final, I was up against Jesse and Kevin. And the night before that heat, I wrote a list down of all the tricks I wanted to do in that heat, and I did every single one of them. So I came off the water thinking like, okay, it doesn't matter the result, you know, I'm stoked on my performance. I'm happy with how I did, and like whatever happens, happens. And yeah, unfortunately, the guys were going a lot higher than me. Yeah. Maybe not as technical in some aspects, but you have to respect the format. It's 70% height. So yeah. Congrats to them for sure.
Yeah, fair enough, man. Congrats to all of you mofos. It's such a crazy event. And it's like, you know, podium is insane when like, you know, most people nearly kill themselves just even competing in the event. So yeah, props, bro. Yeah. Props.
Thanks, man.
So yeah, dude. And was that your second time to Cape Town ever, or had you been to Cape Town a bunch of times before that?
I've been there a few times in the past, but mostly just for photo shoots and kind of doing work for my sponsors. Mm. So yeah, basically the last 2 years, I've really had the chance to enjoy it a little bit more. Like this year, for instance, I went a month in advance with the idea of training as much as possible. But unfortunately, we didn't get many bigger days. We didn't get such very strong wind conditions before the event. So I was mostly just like partying and messing around and just living the Cape Town life, which is, it's so cool. I mean, it's a place that's pretty similar to home in terms of like vibe and climate and people. So yeah, I feel really, really at home there.
Awesome, dude. So yeah, like for someone who's like never been to Cape Town, what are like some good places to stay or like kind of must do things in Cape Town, kite wise or just general, you know, shit to see?
That's the cool thing about Cape Town. I mean, there's a lot of different people that come together. You know, of course, you got the whole kite people that mostly stay over at the Table View side. Then you have, I don't know, people that want to come just to do touristing or visit the vineyards, or there's a lot of like model agencies. So there's plenty of chicks. There's like, all, I don't know, there's all these different kind of people and you can do everything in Cape Town. It's not a place that you're going to get bored. So yeah, it doesn't matter what you do. You got to get over there and you'll definitely find your kind of people.
Shoot. So it sounds like Cape Town is a must.
Yeah.
Awesome, man. Sick. And then like, so what are you got any big goals for the rest of the year? Any tricks you're working on? Any like other kind of things that you want to accomplish over the next year?
Yeah, this year I really want to focus on doing a couple big video projects. I'm working with a few people that have budgets and things to do big things. I'm not really keen on just competing. I want to go to places that no one's kited before. I want to land tricks that no one's done before. And I just want to push the sport in general and kind of bring the hype back. That I think there was a bit more hype in the sport back in the day, and I want to kind of bring that back. So yeah, let's just see how the year goes. Hopefully there's no injuries involved so I can kind of achieve my ambitions. But yeah, if there's not that, then there'll be nothing stopping me.
Awesome, dude. Look forward to, you know, seeing what you cook up. Here's a funny question. Basically, like, if you could, you know, because obviously you've been a freestyle rider for a long time, so you got pretty big bag of tricks, I would say. But if you could only do, like, 3 tricks for the rest of your kite life, what would they be?
3 tricks?
3 tricks. That's it. You can only do 3 tricks every session forever. That's it.
Okay, so... Does it have to be tricks that I've landed before?
I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be, but obviously, you know, it's something that's going to feel good and you're going to enjoy doing forever.
Okay, so it'd probably be like one flat water trick, like one air trick. I'd say like a nose grabbed bag mode 7, ooh, which I haven't landed yet, but ooh, it would be sick to land.
Yeah.
Then probably one kicker trick, so... Seen a few of the guys do it, like Moby Dick, coming around, grab the nose, switch hands, and put it to blind, or 7. Be having a good day.
Dirty.
And then, yeah, just a big kite loop trick. So probably, I'm not sure if you want to unhook or not in this kite loop, but I think I do. Probably like a big kite loop mob or a kite loop KGB. Not sure. Oh, like, damn. This would be sick to take off a Cape Town kicker going full speed. Like, grab, take off the kicker, do a massive kite loop back roll, unhook like 15 meters high and pass the bar.
Damn,
that'd
dude.
That'd be sick.
That's legendary, dude. For top 3 tricks forever, that's insane.
Yeah.
That's sick, dude. Awesome, man.
I'm not sure if I dare to do those tricks every session, though.
Right, that's it, dude. You're locked in now, man. That's it. As you get older, you turn into old Ian Whaley. You're going to have to do those tricks every session, bro. You got it on record. Oh, man. That's crazy. So, yeah, also, like, you know, obviously you've been pro kiteboarder for a while, so you've been able to travel to a lot of, like, different spots to shred. So, like, what are, like, probably your top 2 places to shred? You know, for kind of someone who wants to go to a place and have a sick kiting trip, you know, where would you recommend they go?
I mean, I guess everyone says the same thing because it literally is the best spot, Brazil. Like, the northeast of Brazil is the place to progress in kiting. It's just got everything, you know, lagoons, waves, and most importantly, it's got super constant and consistent winds. You can wake up any morning and you'll know you have wind from, I don't know, from 10 a.m. in the morning until 6 p.m. at night. So yeah, Brazil for me is the place where I've progressed most. I've been going there since a little kid. But I've checked out a few other spots in, like, Brazil only works from end of summer until maybe January. So then you got the rest of the year to go to other places. Then the season in Cape Town starts, which is obviously amazing conditions, maybe not as easy to progress in, but for bigger, they're great. And then in summer, I love staying around Europe. We got a lot of sick spots here. Like Portugal is really good. Greece is amazing. Italy is amazing. You have a lot of thermal winds in all of those places. So yeah, from end of summer till end of the year, Brazil, then you can go to Cape Town and then you can stay around Europe.
Shoot, yeah, that pretty much covers the whole globe, boo. Solid.
Yeah. Awesome. Or you can just go to Antigua and live in a fairy tale for the rest of your life.
Right, that's it. Like four options, those places or just island life. And they all have their, you know, pros and cons.
I have to come visit you, man. Is Antigua seasonal or does it work? What time
is it? It's pretty seasonal. Like the wind starts kind of kicking in like December-ish time, sometimes early December, and then blows until about June, July. So it's a pretty decent season. January and February are probably like the best months for like a little bit more wind, but sometimes it can be a little bit stormy, but there is more wind then. And then like the later months are more proper trade winds where you're kind of on a bigger kite, but probably similar to Brazil where it's just steady, nice, consistent breeze.
Yeah. And I guess you guys have a lot of flat water spots and then probably outer reefs and things if you want to surf as well.
Yeah, we got, mainly flat water spots. Antigua's kind of a funny island because we're kind of sheltered by a lot of reef, which kind of doesn't create too much waves at all. There's not much surfing here at all. Like, we can get the odd swell here and there, but, like, it's super rare. But for flat water kiting, there's definitely, like, some really cool locations and, like, foiling as well where you can just go and, you know, roam around. It's, like, the perfect place for stuff like that. So, yeah, we definitely got to get you down here at some point, man. It'd be sick.
Yeah, be keen. Buy me a flight.
Yeah, dude, we can shoot a whole video part, you know? It'd be dope. Yeah, man. So, yeah, like, what do you think is going to happen with kiting over the next few years, man? Like, in the next 5 years, what do you think is going to happen? You think the competition scene is going to continue to, like, level up? You think media size is going to continue to get more polished? Like, what is your kind of vision for what's going to happen with kiting in the next like 5 years?
Oh man, for me, kiting is like one of the coolest sports out there. I mean, it's so diverse and it's got all of the ingredients to become a super big sport and a mainstream sport. But we basically need a bit more consistency in the competition side. Mm-hmm. Over the last few years, especially in freestyle, we've had a lot of political problems, a lot of fights and things, because we want to push the sport in a certain direction and then other people get involved and they want to push it in a more commercial way. But I think everything is slowly falling into place. Like this year, for instance, we have already 6 or 7 confirmed freestyle events. So yeah, that's what we need. We just need consistency, and as soon as we have that, we'll start to gather a following and people will start to understand what our sport is about. Yeah. And yeah, that's what I think happens and is the problem in kiting at the moment. You know, there's a lot of people kite surfing, but not every single person that kite surfs knows who the top guys are or knows where the competitions are at or what's really going on in the sport. It's mostly just people that buy a kite and just want to have fun and
So
I think everything's falling into place, and if we have consistency and take it slow, then sport's just gonna progressively grow and grow until it gets big, and hopefully we have some really famous or like legendary riders in the next few years.
For sure, man. Structure and consistency for sure on the whole comp side. Yeah. So most, that's so true what you say though. Like, you know, I would say a big majority of the everyday kiters like have no idea about much competition stuff at all.
No, you know? Definitely not.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, so I'm sure you'll be involved in the scene for a lot more years. So we'll see how, you know, things continue to cook up.
Yeah, I would just want to say like one more thing about that. I think it's kind of our responsibility to make sure that people have an understanding about our sport. You know, it's up to the magazines, it's up to the like online media, up to all of the riders,
mm-hmm.
you know, to kind of make sure that everyone around them knows what is cool and what is not and how we should be pushing the sport. And sometimes it's not always good to go for like the most commercial option. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, yeah, it's good to just let everyone know like what's up and this is how it is and this is the way we're pushing the sport. And if you want to be cool, then you have to push it in this direction. And that's that.
No, yeah, for sure. There needs to be like a few, you know, people like yourself. And like, it's cool to see, like, it is progressing in kind of the right direction. For sure, the freestyle tour has had its ups and downs. But like, even like the park scene, and you say the freestyle tour is starting to get more events. So it is taking shape. It's just, you know, growing pains over the years. It'll start to just, you know, make more sense once we got, you know, riders like yourself kind of in positions to help, you know, guide it along. So
yeah, I think a lot of sports have had those kind of problems at the start of the sports, not really knowing in which direction they're going, but eventually it'll all work out because kitesurfing is an amazing sport. And you know, it gives you a feeling that not many other sports can give you, or not many other things can give you. So
yeah, for sure, boo. Kiting's the Don Dada, man. It's the hybrid of all the sports. Any sport you love, kiting is that, but much more, you know. So basically, man's a full-time kiter. So how long have you been like a pro kiteboarder now, like officially full-time?
7 years. Since I got my first sponsorship. Yeah,
ching ching.
7-8 years.
That's awesome, man. So like, obviously, and it's, yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
it's cool to see a lot of the guys still doing well. Like for example, Kevin, he just, you know, he's 30 years old and he's still at the top of his game, winning the King of the Air. So it's pretty cool as a young rider to see, because I don't know. I remember a few years ago, a lot of people saying, you can only be at the top of your game competitively until you're 25, because kiting's such a hardcore sport. But I think if you stay motivated and look after your body, you can go for as long as your mind and body can handle it.
Yeah, no doubt, man. You know, people like Kevin are definitely living proof of that. You know, once you ride smart and you know what you're trying to do, your life can be pretty long. So yeah, that kind of rolls into like the next question a little bit though. Like, what advice would like you give to, you know, an up and coming kid who wants to go pro? What are some things he or she should think about to, you know, one, obviously get better at kiting, but also get, you know, more involved with the kite scene as far as trying to attract the right people to create opportunity?
Well, first of all, I think you have to tell yourself that you're not too old to start or to learn or to dream about becoming pro. Because a lot of people, by the time they're right, like, I don't know, 13, 14, they're already like, oh, I'm too old to become a pro. You know, kids are starting at 8.
Mm.
But that's not really true. Like, kiting is such a young sport still. There's not that many people fully dedicating their lives to become a professional. I know people that started kiting at the age of 15 and that they're now on the world tour.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's not too late. You know, if you put enough dedication into it and time, then you're going to make it. But yeah, most of all, you have to stay super motivated and you have to really, really love it. There's going to be days where you're not going to want to ride, and you have to put in the work and the time to make it to the top. It doesn't just get handed to you. And it's obviously a lot of people are luckier than others. You know, some people get support from their family. Some people just happen to be born in the best kite spot in the world. But if you're not one of those people, then you're going to have to sacrifice a few things and just go for it. But trust me, like, if you make it, it's definitely worth it, because not many people have a lifestyle like ours.
Yeah, true that, man. It's definitely a very unique lifestyle, getting to, you know, do what you love and get to see places that you didn't even know exist. I remember for me, when I first kind of got into kiting, it was, you know, luckily I had someone kind of, Andre Philip, who was kind of taking off. And that for me, that was the moment where I could see like, oh, there's potential to like do this kiting thing and, you know, do something with it. But yeah, I've been able to like see sick places and meet cool people. Even now we're having this convo, like all this stuff, like so many crazy things happen when you're like motivated and you just go after exactly what you want, you know? So
definitely.
So yeah, kind of wrapping up here a little bit, but so obviously for both of us, kiting's a, you know, big part of our lives, but for someone like yourself, you know, are you obsessed with anything besides kiting? What do you do when you're not on the water and, you know, shredding the gnar?
I just don't take life too seriously. I think like a lot of people take life way too seriously. Like they think they've got all of these obligations and they have to do this and that. But I understand that normal people have jobs and these things. But if you have a little bit of freedom in your life, don't put extra weight on yourself. Just do what you love. Like for me, I just like when I'm not kiting, I just love to have a good time with my friends, go out, you know, and just not take anything too seriously. Do a lot of other sports. I love to surf. I love to skate. I love to snowboard. And yeah, just meet new people, see new places, do cool things. And when I have to put my head down and be serious, I'll be serious. But other than that, just have a good time.
Do that, man. That's some good advice, you know. It's good to have a balance, at least, you know, because if you're too obsessed with something forever and you never take a little step back, you're guaranteed you're going to burn out, you know.
Exactly. You get so burnt out if you're just – and you don't progress. I see a lot of guys in a lot of sports where they just try and try and try and try and they're just not getting anywhere and they're not even having fun anymore, but they keep on trying. You just have to like step back, take a break, and then come back to it when your head's in the right place, and then you'll definitely move forward.
True that, man. Solid. So yeah, kind of last question here, just to wrap things up. You know, obviously you're still very into your pro career, but have you? This is kind of funny coming off the question we just did, but have you thought about, you know, do you have any more big goals, like besides actually competing or any life goals? Because it's always interesting to think about the life of a pro athlete after they're like fully in the game being a pro athlete, you know? Have you thought much about that at all?
Yeah, definitely. I've definitely thought about it. For sure, you have to think a little bit about your future. And the earlier you start, the better off you are going to be in an earlier future. So hopefully I have the opportunity to open up a kite school in the main spot here in Tarifa. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to do that next year or the year after. So that's kind of going to be my first business plan. And I'll just kind of take it from there. I've got a lot of ambitions, but I'm going to take it step by step. And I think I'm in a good place to start a business orientated around kiting, because I've got good connection. I've got good relationship with my sponsors. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's my first thing. And for the next 3 years, I'm going to be competing full on in freestyle. Like, I want to get one more world title under my belt. And if I achieve that, I'll take it from there. But yeah, I think everything's going to work out just fine.
Yeah, yeah, dude. That's awesome, man. That's solid. It's cool that you're thinking about the business side as well. And, you know, still got your focus on comps, but, you know, sounds like you're doing everything right, bro. Stoked to see how things continue to pan out for you.
Cool, man. Thank you.
So, yeah, that pretty much kind of wraps it up, dude. Really appreciate you kind of taking the time to chit-chat. You know, if there's anything else you want to say, now's the time. You want people to check anything out, any videos, any place that they can kind of follow you to stay in touch with what you're up to?
Yeah, just follow me on my social media, Liam Whaley. Instagram is where I upload most of my content, and I look forward to showing you guys a lot of upcoming projects, competitions, and just fun things to watch. So stay tuned, and thanks so much, Jake, for having me. It's been sick. I'm happy that you're doing this podcast thing, because I think these are the kind of things that are missing in our sports, like long video parts, podcasts, yeah. and things that showcase the sport in a more personal way. So thank you.
Awesome, brother. Really appreciate it, man. All the best, and we'll talk again soon, bro.
Cool, dude. All the best.
All right, guys. So yeah, that pretty much sums up today's pod session. Big thanks for tuning in and super duper big ups to Liam for taking the time to jam out. It's pretty cool to hear that he's already listened to a few podcasts and he was kind of excited to get on the show. So big ups. But yeah, really appreciate him taking the time. If you guys enjoyed this episode, make sure you go follow myself and Liam on Instagram. My Instagram handle is Jake Kelsick. Liam's Instagram handle is Liam Whaley. It was super cool hearing his story and, you know, hearing where his drive and motivation comes from. If you guys really enjoyed this episode and you want to help support the show, you can head over to patreon.com/JakeKelsick. It's a little platform that allows you guys to directly contribute and kind of help support this show, as well as all the stuff that I've been doing on YouTube. Come say what's up. Come say your favorite part of the podcast. It's always cool to kind of hear from people who are consuming the content and listening to what we're up to. Definitely motivates me to kind of keep doing it, keep pushing, keep making stuff. And yeah, that's it, guys. Hope you guys have a good day, great week, and a happy life. All right, guys, peace, love, and big ups.